When I was at university in the late 1970s, T.S. Eliot was regarded as a god. Mind you, literature was believed to have ended in 1945. I think most of us found some of his work impenetrable, but even the longest, hardest poems would suddenly shine with humanity or humour, and that amazing phrase-making which means I can never see middle-aged commuters without thinking of the balding head of J. Alfred Prufrock. Eliot was born in the same year as Sassoon, 1888, and until his death in 1965, he managed to be master of all trades, working as a critic, a publisher, as well as a poet and a playwright. Here he introduces The Journey of the Magi, a dramatic monologue written in 1927, just after he converted to Anglicanism. The recording's a bit crackly, but it's wonderfully atmospheric.
I think this is the first time I've ever read any of my own poems over the radio for either an American or an English audience, though I've done so once or twice for overseas services. I shall now take one of my aerial poems. Aerial Poems was the title of a series of poems which included many other poets as well as myself. These were all new poems which were published during four or five successive years as a kind of Christmas card. Nobody else seemed to want the title afterward, so I kept it for myself, simply to designate the four of my poems which appeared in this way. Journey of the Magi is obviously a subject suitable for the Christmas season. A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey, the ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter, and the camels galled, sore-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces, and the silken girls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men cursing and grumbling, and running away and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out, and the lack of shelters, and the cities hostile, and the towns unfriendly, and the villages dirty, and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end, we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears, saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn, we came down to a temperate valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a water mill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information, and so we continued and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago. I remember, and I would do it again, but set down this, where we led all that way for birth or death. There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We return to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death.
Doesn't he sound priestly? Our second poem is A Game of Chess from the Wasteland, arguably the defining poem of the 20th century. The recording was made in 1935, and there's a bit of background noise, but you get a great sense of Eliot's playfulness. As Craig Rain points out in his introduction to our booklet, he was a great practical joker.
A game of chess. The chair she sat in, like a burnished throne, glowed on the marble, where the glass held up by standards wrought with fruited vines, from which a golden cupidon peeped out, another hid his eyes beneath his wing. doubled the flames of 7 brass candelabra, reflecting light upon the table as the glitter of her jewels rose to meet it, from satin cases poured in rich profusion. In vials of ivory and colored glass, unstoppered lurked her strange synthetic perfumes. Unguent, powdered or liquid, troubled, confused, and drowned the sense in odors. Stirred by the air that freshened from the window, these ascended, in fattening the prolonged candle flame, flung their smoke into the lacquiaria, stirring the pattern on the coppered ceiling. Huge seaward bed with copper, burned green and orange, framed by the colored stone, in which sad light a carved dolphin swam. Above the antique mantle was displayed, as though a window gave upon the sylvan scene, the chains of Philomel, by the barbarous king so rudely forced. Yet there the nightingale filled all the desert with inviolable voice, and still she cried, and still the world pursues, jug, jug, to dirty ears. And other withered stumps of time were told upon the walls, staring forms, leaned out, leaning, hushing the room enclosed. Footsteps shuffled on the stair. Under the firelight, under the brush, her hair spread out in fiery points, glowed into words, then would be savagely still. My nerves are bad tonight. Yes, bad. Stay with me. Speak to me. Why do you never speak? Speak. What are you thinking of? What thinking? What? I never know what you are thinking. Think. I think we are in Rat's Alley, where the dead men lost their bones. What is that noise? The wind under the door. What is that noise now? What is the wind doing? Nothing again, nothing. Do you know nothing? Do you see nothing? Do you remember nothing? I remember. Those are pearls that were his eyes. Are you alive or not? Is there nothing in your head? But oh, 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 that Shakespearean rag. It's so elegant, so intelligent. What shall I do now? What shall I do? I shall rush out as I am and walk the street with my hair down. So, what shall we do tomorrow? What shall we ever do? The hot water at 10. And if it rains, a closed car at 4. And we shall play a game of chess, pressing lidless eyes and waiting for a knock upon the door. When Lil's husband got demobbed, I said, I didn't mince my words, I said to her myself, hurry up, please, it's time. Now Albert's coming back, make yourself a bit smart. He'll want to know what you done with that money he gave you to get yourself some teeth. He did, I was there. You have them all out, Lil, and get a nice set, he said. I swear I can't bear to look at you. No more can't I, said. Think of poor Albert. He's been in the army 4 years. He wants a good time. And if you don't give it him, as others will, I said. Oh, is there, she said. Something of that, I said. Then I'll know who to thank, she said, and give me a straight look. Hurry up, please. It's time. If you don't like it, you can get on with it, I said. Others can pick and choose if you can't. If Albert makes off, it won't be for lack of telling. You ought to be ashamed, I said, to look so antique, and her only 31. I can't help it, she said, pulling a long face. It's them pills I took to bring it off, she said. She's had 5 already and nearly died of young George. The chemist said it would be all right, but I've never been the same. You are a proper fool, I said. Well, if Albert won't leave you alone, there it is, I said. What you get married for if you don't want children? Hurry up, please, it's time. Well, that Sunday Albert was home. They had hot gammon. And they asked me in dinner to get the beauty of it hot. Hurry up, please, it's time. Hurry up, please, it's time. Good night, Bill. Good night, Lou. Good night, May. Good night. Doctor. Good night. Good night. Good night, lady. Good night, sweet lady. Good night. Good night.